Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital of Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Leave or face death. This is yet another warning the Israeli military has issued to residents living in the northern part of the besieged Gaza Strip. The warning comes as hundreds of thousands of Gazans have already moved southward to take refuge in temporary shelters. However, the areas that they have fled to are also being hit by Israeli warplanes and artillery. More than 4,700 Palestinians have been killed since the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza over 2 weeks ago. More than 16,000 have been wounded. According to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, or UNRWA, it has also lost at least 29 of its staff in Israeli bombardments. In the meantime, the Israeli military said one of its tanks had accidentally fired at an Egyptian post near the border with Gaza. Israeli warplanes have rained down bombs in areas around three hospitals in Gaza, adding to the immense strain on medical facilities in the besieged territory. According to Palestinian media reports, Israeli missiles hit the vicinity of Al-Shifa and Al-Quds hospitals in Gaza City. The strikes also heard near Indonesia Hospital in northern Gaza, and its director reported injuries and severe damage to the complex. But there were no immediate reports of possible destruction and injuries near two other hospitals. On Saturday, Israel ordered 20 hospitals in Gaza, including Al-Quds, to evacuate. The regime is facing a chorus of condemnation from around the world over its bombardment of Al-Ahli Hospital on Tuesday. Nearly 500 people, including those who had taken refuge from Israel's assaults, were killed in the strike. Korea Ria Goda is with the Federation of Iraqi Trade Unions. She tells us about the need for solidarity with Palestinians amid Israel's onslaught on Gaza and the normalization deals between some Arab states and the regime.
Right now, the people of Gaza and the children of Gaza are dying, and the world is quiet. Even some of the Arab countries that pretend to be concerned for the future of Jerusalem and its liberation, they are now normalizing with Israel. This thing, the normalization, which is humiliating and frightening because the people of Palestine is in need of total solidarity and support, and a firm stand of every Arab and all free people of the world. We are embroiled with them in the struggle. Even though we are from far-off lands geographically, we continue our struggle with them in order to prepare and mobilize the Arab public opinion and international public opinion in order to assist and support and stand firmly with the struggle of the Palestinian people. And now I believe that the Iraqi people will spare nothing, will not hold back to be with their Palestinian people in solidarity. And in fact, some youth have all the determination to go to Palestine in order to help their people in Gaza.
Israel is also escalating its atrocities in the West Bank while continuing its relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip. Regime forces have killed two more Palestinians in the occupied territory, 17-year-old Jihad Saleh and Mohammed Abu Zer, aged 29, were fatally shot during an Israeli raid on the town of Zawata, west of Nablus. Two other Palestinians were injured by the regime's live bullets. Earlier, another young Palestinian was killed by Israeli troops near a refugee camp north of Al-Khalil. Since the start of Israel's bloody war in Gaza, 93 Palestinians have been killed and some 1,400 others injured in the West Bank. Israel says one of its troops was killed and three others were injured during a raid into the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military spokesman says the raid was carried out as part of preparation for a ground attack and to gather intelligence. Earlier, the military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said it had ambushed an Israeli armored unit that had trespassed a few meters into the territory. The Al-Qassam brigades added that two Israeli bulldozers and a tank were destroyed, and the forces retreated back across the separation fence. Hamas has warned that Gaza will turn into a graveyard for invaders. The resistance movement has also been firing thousands of missiles into Israel. Since the beginning of Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, at least 1,500 Israelis have been killed and nearly 5,000 injured. Iran's president has dismissed U.S. President Joe Biden's pro-Israel remarks as reactionary, anti-democratic, and inhumane. Addressing a cabinet session, Ebrahim Raisi said that Biden's recent statement amounts to Washington's unwanted confession that the Israeli regime is a fake one. Biden had said recently that if there were not an Israel, the U.S. would have to invent one. President Raisi then touched upon the unprecedented global outrage and fury against the heinous crimes being committed by the Tel Aviv regime in Gaza. He slammed the international community for remaining tight-lipped in the face of the Israeli massacre of Palestinians with the U.S. backing. He added the Israeli crimes against Palestinians are a glaring example of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Iran's foreign minister says Israel's ultimate goal is the forced displacement of Palestinians from the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank to Egypt's Sinai Peninsula and parts of Jordan. Hossein Abdullahian said Tel Aviv wants a Palestinian government to be formed outside of Palestinians' ancestral lands. However, he added, resistance groups are the main obstacle to the regime's intended plot. The Iranian foreign minister made the remarks during a phone call with his Egyptian counterpart. He said the Iranian Red Crescent Society is ready to send food and medicine to Gaza through Egypt. Amir Abdullahian has also sent a letter to the Vatican's foreign minister detailing Israel's atrocities and crimes against Palestinians. In the letter, he said the occupied Palestinian territories are witnessing a new version of barbarism. The top Iranian diplomat underlined that Israel is enforcing systematic apartheid not only on Muslims, but on the followers of all Abrahamic religions, including Christians. In a presser in Tehran, South Africa's foreign minister Naledi Pandor has called on the international community to take action on the violation of the rights of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
I believe, as South Africa, that we as global community need to pay far greater attention to the situation of injustice and lack of enjoyment of human rights that is confronting the people of Palestine. As South Africa, we've often spoken about how, to the world community, particularly the most developed countries in the world, some deserve human rights, others do not deserve human rights. We see this in the treatment of the people of Palestine, that their land can be occupied, but we don't talk about occupation. So it is important that as the global community, we really begin to draw together as progressive nations to have far greater activism against the injustice that is being experienced by the people of Palestine. It is sad that many countries in the region in which Palestine exists had essentially deserted the people of Palestine. But I think they can see today why countries like South Africa have been consistent in their support for Palestine and have never deviated from the belief President Mandela held that until the people of Palestine are free, South Africa will not be fully free, nor any other person that suffers from injustice. So it is our task as nations of the world to do much more than we have done before, to support the people of Palestine, be it in the United Nations system or elsewhere, to ensure that finally they enjoy justice and the human rights that many of us have access to today. And we don't pretend that Palestine is not occupied. We do not pretend that the people of Palestine do not enjoy rights. We find it unconscionable that Israel is supported to essentially wage a war of ethnic cleansing against the people of Palestine, and the world should be horrified and should be acting far more urgently on this matter.
Pro-Palestinian rallies have been held across the world to demand an end to the bloodshed in Gaza amid the regime's brutal aggression against the besieged territory.
Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
In Brussels, thousands of people held a protest by gathering outside of the EU Commission and Council's headquarters. They chanted Free Palestine, holding banners and waving Palestinian flags. Similar gatherings were held in France and Germany in defiance of a governmental crackdown on such protests under the pretext of preventing anti-Semitism. Sporadic scuffles broke out during those protests in Berlin. Similar protests were held in Denmark, Poland, Mauritius, and other parts of the globe. On Saturday, tens of thousands of pro-Palestinian demonstrators marched through a rainy London to demand Israel stop its bombardment of Gaza. The fallout from the U.S.-backed and directed war on Gaza and the backlash against Israel is felt around the world, especially in the U.S. Conferences and events have been canceled, and pro-Palestine analysts and guests filtered at media events or TV appearances. Meanwhile, calls are growing for the U.S. to defund Israel.
The true face of the Israeli regime and the U.S. backing has rocked the U.S. status quo when it comes to Israel. Widespread attempts to suppress pro-Palestinian voices have reached unprecedented levels in the U.S. The cancellation of major conferences, demands for the dismissal of workers who express support for Palestinians, and intimidation campaigns against Arab American voices critical of Israeli policies are just some examples. This has even affected U.S. lawmakers, like Senator Elizabeth Warren, once a U.S. presidential candidate, in which more than 260 of her staffers signed an open letter demanding that she call for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, describing Israel as increasingly fascist, that commits war crimes and enforces a brutal apartheid, calling for an immediate ceasefire. But only certain U.S. lawmakers have the guts to openly support Palestine.
You know what's so hard sometimes is watching those videos and the people telling the kids don't cry and like let them cry. And they're shaking and some of you know this. They keep telling them not to cry in Arabic. They can cry. I can cry. We all can cry. If we're not crying, something is wrong. And so I'm telling you right now, President Biden, not all America's with you on this one.
Previous Israeli crimes are no secret. Kana, 1996. Israel bombed a UN shelter, killing 106 civilians, mostly kids. Israel was never held accountable. Lebanon, 1982. The Sabra and Shatila massacre resulted in the killings of between 2,000 and 3,500 Palestinian refugees and Lebanese civilians in 2 days in the city of Beirut. Previous massacres of Palestinians by Israel have been etched in people's minds, especially the wars on the Gaza Strip, which is why the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction, requires a reboot, one to include Israeli officials, including the pilots who dropped the bombs, on the Palestinians. After all, now is the time that sanctioning Israeli products could prove successful, since Israel's economy is tanking due to the war. We mentioned a couple of first-time incidents before. Here's another. Thousands of Muslims praying in front of the U.S. Congress to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. A scene that creates a sense of deja vu. For this is reminiscent of how Palestinians have prayed in front of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in their future capital.
At this point, I believe we do have our guest now from Islamabad, Arif Rizvi, who's an Islamic scholar, if he is ready.
Yes.
Okay, Arif Rizvi, welcome to the program. The scenes that we just saw in the border between Iraq and Jordan is a window to the world and how it has rallied behind the Palestinian cause. But this Palestinian solidarity is trying to be somewhat undermined by the Western media, which are spreading their tentacles across the world in the suppression of the true story of Palestine and how Israel is the victim and not the other way around. How do you see that battle being fought, and who is coming out a winner on that?
I believe what is going on today in Palestine, whereby Israel is bombing continuously the Palestinian homes and hospitals, is a part of a war strategy. What happened on 7th October, whereby the attack which Hamas did, the operation which they carried out, if you look from the military science perspective, it was a 100% successful operation, whereby whatever they planned, they achieved from that operation. And it was a shock to the entire world, specifically to Israel and their strong allies, that is the Western countries who are supporting Israel today, and also some Arab nations, that how can such a big power, which has got such a big fame and pomp in the region, could undergo such an attack from a small militancy group. And this came a shock to the world also, that Israel is not really that strong as it has been portrayed. And everything was shattered for Israel. Now, what was Israel supposed to do? They were defeated on 7th October. And there was a wave, and there is a wave of fear and awe that is going on in Israel and the Jews and the Zionists who want to leave Israel now at the first opportunity which they get. But U.S., specifically U.S. and other countries in the West do not want Israel to give up. And the only way to cover this success of Hamas and defeat of Israel is to create a media wave over here by which they continuously show the bombarding which is going on. They want to do that bombarding so that people can forget the Hamas operation and be focused on the operation which is going on in Gaza right now. So this is the game, a war tactic which Israel is playing. Basically, Israel is now no more there. It is U.S. who is at the back of Israel, supporting them to stand over there. Otherwise, they have given up. They don't have the courage to enter inside Gaza. They have got tanks parked outside Gaza, but they don't want to enter inside because they know the consequences, what is going to happen if they enter inside. They would be wiped off completely. And U.S. and Israel both now are on this strategy that we should keep on bombarding in Gaza so that either people of Gaza might evacuate and leave that place. And that gives an inspiration to various other oppressed nations where minorities are being oppressed, and they have got a path from this group of Hamas on how to stand with courage, perseverance, istiqamat, and show that resistance towards oppressors and tyrants, and eventually come out successful in that, though it comes at a cost. Everything comes at a cost, which is something normal, and which is, I think, everyone knows as the Islamic teachings, that you need to be prepared for such kind of brutality and calamities which happens with you when you undergo such kind of a resistance movement over here. So your question about defeat, yes, Israel is defeated, and volunteers are ready to move inside to move to Palestine and support them. Itself is a sign of a big success for Palestine, for Hamas, that people are with them. And this is what is important. The rulers are few in numbers. The people are in millions and billions.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. Now, when we speak about resistance, we want to see whom this resistance is standing against. Our region, West Asia, is one of the regions that the world's power seekers have been focused on for various reasons. The powerful countries of the world have focused on this region and tried to interfere in it because of its resources, because of its geographical location, because of its being a center for Islam and for multiple other reasons. Even now, we can see that the powerful countries interfere and intervene whenever they have the opportunity. The resistance is standing against these things. The culture of resistance against the domineering presence of powerful countries that have no right to be in this region has now spread widely. This is the reason why the issue of the presence of Iran in this region has angered the US and some other countries. What is understood is this: Iran's presence means Iran's interference. However, we do not interfere.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Yes, we are present, but we have a spiritual presence. Others have official bases in many of the countries in this region. We do not have bases, yet we are spiritually present. Our spiritual presence is much more than theirs. This is what angers them. This is what the sacred defense gave us. One of the effects of the sacred defense has been the growth and reinforcement of the idea of resistance within the country itself. My dear ones, over 30 years have passed since the war. During these 30-some years, we have been attacked on many occasions. We have seen numerous seditions in different areas, many of which were not noticed by most people. But they took place. Some of them took place before everyone's eyes, as you have witnessed during different years. All these seditions failed due to the Iranian people. Why? Because the Iranian nation has institutionalized the practice of resistance within itself.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Since the beginning of the latest spate of violence between Israel and Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip, Western countries and the U.S. in particular have voiced their unequivocal support for Israel and ignored the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people. The U.S. President Joe Biden visited Israel on Wednesday amid an intensified Israeli campaign of airstrikes on Gaza, the most densely populated strip of land in the world, which has killed thousands of Palestinians, injuring over 13,000. Biden has unequivocally defended the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in the coastal Gaza Strip. Biden said Washington would provide the embattled regime with everything it needed to, quote, defend itself.
For decades, we've ensured Israel's qualitative military edge. And later this week, I'm going to ask the United States Congress for unprecedented support package for Israel's defense.
The U.S. president promised to ask Congress for an unprecedented military aid package for Israel to assist its ongoing war on Gaza. Reports indicated that Biden was considering a supplemental request of about $10 billion for Israel. It is now feared that the U.S. President Joe Biden's unflinching backing of Israeli aggression against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip could give the Tel Aviv regime the green light to commit mass atrocities and genocide against the people of Palestine. It is now reported that Joe Biden has told Israeli Prime Minister that Washington is fully in support of Tel Aviv's plans to launch a ground invasion of the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier this week, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, highlighted the role of the U.S. in Israel's ongoing atrocities against the Palestinian people. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that numerous pieces of information suggest that the U.S. is formulating the current policy within the Zionist regime. The U.S. was the sole vote against the resolution on Wednesday. Reports say the Pentagon, if need be, will deploy virtually 2,000 troops to Israel to assist the occupying regime with its war on the besieged Gaza Strip. The boots on the ground are said to be tasked with providing advisory and medical support only. The specifics, the where and when of the deployment, remain unclear. The report comes after the Pentagon said it was moving another carrier group to the Mediterranean, the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower Strike Group. Combined force of more than 5,000 sailors will join the USS Gerald Ford, which arrived off the coast of Israel last week. The Biden administration has rejected Arab calls for de-escalation or ceasefire, rendering the U.S. complicit in present and future Israeli war crimes. There's been hardly any American mention of the Palestinians' plight during a week of vicious Israeli bombardment of Gaza. For years, polls have highlighted the overwhelming Arab support for Palestine as the foremost Arab cause, and the growing hostility towards America, which is seen as a destabilizing hegemonic force in the region.
There is the possibility that if the war really widens not only to include Gaza, but maybe the West Bank, that it will not only alienate Arab allies, but could potentially lead to a breaking of relations with Israel.
First of all, Biden is unwelcome here because he has a major role in this game, a major role in the aggression on our people, and he is providing the money and weapons to kill our people in Gaza and everywhere.
The long history of U.S. military aid to Israel has helped the regime develop its military prowess, and it continues to represent a significant share of Israel's military budget. Currently, Israel receives $3.8 billion in military aid from the U.S. annually, under a memorandum signed in 2019.
Instead, what we have seen is that Israel has been allowed to do whatever it wants when it comes to killing Palestinians, when it comes to stealing Palestinian land, when it comes to ethnic cleansing, when it comes to crossing the red lines that are enshrined in international law. Israel's allowed to get away with it, and not only get away with it, but continues to receive support and financial support from the United States as well.
That accounted for about 16% of Israel's total military budget in 2022. The U.S. has strong historical and economic ties to Israel. The U.S. is Israel's top trading partner, with annual bilateral trade of nearly $50 billion in goods and services. Unprecedented admission. An Israeli official admitting that war crimes will be committed in the face of the international community and the world. War crime number one, referring to Palestinians as human shields that need to be killed. War crime number two, a complete siege of the Gaza Strip, no water, food, or electricity. And war crime number three, the forced displacement of Palestinians. The Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, true to his word, has closed off the Strip completely, while the bloodshed continued. Palestinians have been slaughtered and murdered, especially children. But Israeli anti-Palestinian sentiment has even gone beyond hatred, if that is even possible. Take Zippy Navan, a close advisor to Netanyahu's wife. She posted outrageous remarks on Facebook, saying that it was not enough to flatten Gaza. She said the culprits should be captured and tortured one by one by pulling out their nails and skinning them alive. Her reference was to the false reports that resistance fighters from Hamas had committed those crimes, part of the disinformation campaign that Western media had reported.
Soldiers told me they believe 40 babies, children, were killed.
The Israeli Prime Minister's spokesman just confirmed
babies and toddlers were found with their heads decapitated in Kfar Aza.
The lie was so severe that it had forced apologies, like the U.S. media giant CNN and its presenter. What is significant here is not the apology, not that it does not matter, but the source of the fake news, that it was the office of the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu who had distributed the fake news. The Israeli war on Gaza has risked throwing the region into a war to open several fronts. Hezbollah and resistance groups in Lebanon, Iraq's Kataib Hezbollah, Yemeni fighters, and also Syria, all possibilities. And Iran, Hossein Salami, the commander-in-chief of the IRGC, relayed his views on Hamas' fighting capacity. Today, according to everyone's admission, the Zionist regime has not only suffered defeat, but also humiliation, and Hamas alone, and without relying on any other power, has caused them a great defeat. Iran and Hezbollah are formidable forces, which Israel cannot deal with simultaneously. Israel knows that, and so does Iran. But Israel has to contend with another front, one that may continue beyond the war, and that is the possibility of a civil war within the occupied Palestinian territories. Palestinian deaths in the OPT have increased dramatically since the operation broke out, with over 50 Palestinians killed so far. Moreover, the Israeli regime forces have increased the number of Palestinians it has detained, that number standing at around 70, all of this in a matter of 10 days. Meanwhile, the Israeli far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir has encouraged Israelis and settlers to pick up arms against Palestinians, as seen here. He's also directed the purchase of more than 10,000 firearms and weapons for around 26,000 Israeli settlers. This points to how this war will extend inside the OPT, to last even longer than the war on Gaza, thus posing an existential threat to Israel. How the war ends and in what state Israel will be left in is not known. But there's another factor that Israel has to worry about, and it's the economy. It has become increasingly clear that the Israeli economy will have a tough time surviving. The devaluation of the shekel, massive investment and capital flight, mass exodus of people, and a rising deficit are all plaguing the economy. The Israeli Central Bank has been forced to withdraw $30 billion from its foreign exchange reserves to prop up the war expenses. Even Israel's Knesset cannot hold a meeting. This session had to be broken up, as Knesset lawmakers went for cover while resistance missiles were raining down overhead. So while Israel may claim parts of the Gaza Strip have turned into rubble, Israel itself has suffered the same, all out of its own doing. Scenes out of the Gaza Strip are nothing short than a massacre. The hospital there is on its last breath, like the patients. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has ordered the evacuation of more than 1 million people from northern Gaza to, quote, temporarily move south to mitigate civilian harm. The UN has condemned this move, warning against devastating humanitarian consequences, warning that the evacuation was simply not possible.
Moving more than 1 million people across a densely populated war zone to a place with no food, water, or accommodation when the entire territory is under siege is extremely dangerous and in some cases simply not possible.
The Palestinian UN envoy had harsher words, urging the UN chief to stop Israel's crimes against humanity.
Stop this carnage of civilians.
Israel's UN ambassador, meanwhile, criticized the UN response to Israel's warning. The UN should be praising Israel for these precautionary actions, he said. For years, the UN has put its head in the sand in the face of Hamas's terror buildup in Gaza. This coming from a regime that has never heeded any UN resolutions, or international law for that matter, and has been called a child killer. The stats here speak for themselves.
More than 150,000 Palestinian civilians have been killed or injured in Gaza and the West Bank since 2008. 33,000 of those were children.
This is what Israel has in mind: the creation of two evacuation routes to the south of Barakah, which Israel has said will not be the target of Israeli attacks. Hamas has rejected that outright. There are fears that Israel is trying to bring people to the streets with the aim of creating gatherings and then taking casualties, something it has done in previous wars. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, it is reported that the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, is negotiating with Persian Gulf Arab countries to convince them to accept the residents of the Gaza Strip. He has said that it is because the Israeli army is getting ready to raise Gaza to the ground. The expression "to raise to the ground" is one that Blinken used exactly. The plan is to transfer 1 million citizens to Egypt and then distribute them to Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. What Israel has in mind is to prepare for a block-by-block warfare in Gaza. Israel has already stated that the goal is to destroy Hamas, disregarding the human costs, which may include the ones in captivity. And that includes Israeli soldiers' lives as well. The resistance fighters can use their tunnel network to get in behind the attack or to attack in all directions, to make it very difficult for Israel to effectively have an advantage. At the end, the U.S. and a U.S.-supported coalition will help Israel demolish the Gaza Strip, which the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has stated. The U.S. would do that through its aircraft carrier, the Gerald Ford, along with the U.K., who has sent surveillance aircraft. But not so fast. Hamas itself has plenty of firepower left in its arsenal, from drones to missiles and its fighters. And there are other players in this battle as well, who are willing and even more able to defeat the enemy forces. Hezbollah and a squadron of fighters, for one, who has said that it would act when deemed necessary. Israel's ultimate goal is a greater Israel. One needs to look at where the American forces are located, from the west of Iraq on the Euphrates border and east of the Euphrates of Syria. But if it comes down to that, there is one formidable force standing in their way: the Islamic Republic of Iran. The European Union has asked Elon Musk to censor information not conforming to the Western narrative over Israel's war of aggression against Palestinians in Gaza. The EU called on Musk, the billionaire owner of the social media website X, formerly known as Twitter, to curb the spread of what it called disinformation about Israel's aggression against Palestinians. In a letter to Musk shared on social media, EU industry chief Thierry Breton claimed that he had indications that X was purportedly being employed to disseminate what he called illegal content and disinformation in the European bloc. The criticism directed at X social media platform is part of a multi-front information war designed to control the narrative around anything surrounding the Palestinian issue and the latest anti-occupation operation. Palestinian support in the West is at an all-time high, despite Western leaders coming out in the open in defense of the Israeli regime and its relentless and indiscriminate aggression against Palestinians. In France, which prides itself for so-called freedom of expression, police attacked a pro-Palestine demonstration.
It's a shame that France is authorizing the protests in favor of Israel, but forbidding the protests for Palestine, arguing that they pose a security problem. They just can put some policemen and they will see that things will go well. We have the right to show solidarity with people who have been suffering oppression for a long time. This has to stop. Stop hypocrisy. Stop.
Western leaders and their media cronies have come out in unison to toe the same false narrative that the Hamas operation was unprovoked and that the Israeli regime is justified in attacking Palestinians. But they fail to mention the unbearable situation that Israel has created for Palestinians, both in Gaza and the occupied West Bank.
Also, this is just part of colonization. This is the last phase of European colonization. And notice that the countries that are most strongly in support of Israel are not just the United States. It's the United States, Australia, and Canada, the offshoots of England, Anglosphere sometimes called, unusual forms of imperialism. These are settler colonial societies.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, cherished listeners of IRIB English Radio, through a transformative experience. I'm Zainab, your host on Islamic upbringing. Let's embark on a journey into the depth of raising children in line with Islamic values. Our experts' answers are rooted in the Noble Quran and the teachings of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam will illuminate your path. So today in our studio we have with us our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you, and to all the listeners, inshallah, my salams to all of you.
So Brother Miqdad, today we have another question. Is it normal for my six-year-old son to cry over incidents when I scolded him months or even years ago? As a mother, I pamper him a lot, but sometimes I lose patience and raise my voice at him. During family gatherings, he certainly remembers those past incidents and starts crying. It surprises me that he's upset about something that happened so long ago. Can you provide any suggestions on how to handle this situation?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The first point that comes in mind is related to pampering. We should be careful when it comes to being too overprotective over children. It's important for children to, especially when they come 5, 6 year olds, to see the world, to be interacting with other children in a way that their parents don't really get involved too much, allowing them to deal with their own situation, their own difficult moments. What happens when a parent pampers or shows too much overprotection over their children, the children become weak at heart and are not able to bear difficult situations.
Okay.
And this is a mistake. This is something that needs to be looked into. See, when we talk about the discussion of love, when we talk about discussion of being there for children, definitely the love of parents is very important. The love of mothers are very important, and children should be filled with this love from their parents. But it should never come in a way that creates a protective barrier over the children that even the normal things of life they can't do on their own, right? And this is why we've said so many times children should be involved, for example, in cleaning up the house, in the
many
chores
other
at home.
Activities, right.
And they should have this normal interaction where sometimes they make mistakes and are told, why did you make this mistake? right? When a child makes a mistake, you can remind him. Say, look, this was not right of you to do. This was not correct of you to do. This is a better way of doing things. Or, for example, they should be allowed to have interaction with other children where they fight within themselves. Children fight. It's normal for them to fight. Parents should not get involved so much. Every time a child is going to be, if your child is going to be fighting with another child or arguing with another child, you feel that you need to get involved and take the side of the child. This plays a very negative, this has negative consequences on a child. Becomes very weak, not able to deal with situations. So the first point regarding this is that as much as possible, parents, whilst they're showing love to the children, whilst they're providing security for the children, they are not creating an overprotection in a way that children are not being able to deal with the normal situations of life.
All right.
The second point is that, or carry on from the first point, is that what happens is that when they children are allowed to deal with the different situations of life, is that it creates for them a level of self-confidence, a level of ability to believe that they have something that's nice, that's something that's positive, and that they don't have to necessarily always rely back on their parents. See, this is important. Obviously, it comes very slowly over the months and the years. A child feels that I am an independent person and I have my own skills, my own ability, my own power to do certain things without my parents.
Right.
And this from a young age it happens, right? For example, when your three-year-old wants to start eating on their own, right? You let them eat on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Or for example, they want to hold the cup of tea, for example, it's a bit hot. Let it be, right? Let them, even if they burn a little bit, for example, let them feel that, look, I have my own hands and my own ability to hold a dangerous thing as a warm cup of tea, for example.
Right.
What happens is it builds a confidence in them, a sense that I can do things without my parents. And right. This strength and this confidence is very important.
So what is more important over here, I feel like mothers should be loving, but they should not be blind in that love. They should allow the children to be independent or feel that sense of independence and not make them rely over them in each and every activity, what often parents do, especially the mothers. Well, we will delve a little deeper into this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Hey, stop! I got a
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Brother Mikhtad. And we're discussing about a child who is over-pampered. And now he cries over the incidents that happened a long time ago. And now this mother is upset with this. Why he remembers the incidents and suddenly starts crying over them that happened a long time ago. And Brother Mikhtad firstly said that stop over-pampering. The pampering in itself is a big problem. Give them a sense of independence. And they should not feel like they are dependent on their parents in each and every activity. Yes, Brother Mikhtad.
Another point is that certain kids are very sensitive. And so again, this is goes back to, at least to some extent, it goes back to personalities. So and it goes back, and it's present in adults as well. So you find some adults, you can say the worst things to them, but they'll never feel anything, right? Mm-hmm. They're as hard as a brick, which is not necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just describing personalities.
Right.
And some adults, both men and women, are such that a little pointing a finger or saying something and they're heartbroken or they feel really bad about things very quickly. So these are the extreme. obviously the balance that we require is that a person is able to deal with these emotion that happens and these things that are said to them. They're not oversensitive about different things, but at the same time, they also have the ability to maneuver around their emotions and feel when things are said to them, but be able to deal with that that emotion.
Right.
When it comes to kids, again, same thing. Kids, or some kids are very sensitive. So we need to take care of this. Kids that are very sensitive, we need to teach them, firstly, not to take things at heart,
right?
Not to take things too deeply, to be a bit more independent from the words of others. So being oversensitive goes back, or one of the things that it goes back to is that they judge themselves based on others.
Okay.
Or they rely on others about their own self-image or about things that they do, right? So the moment somebody says something to them or somebody stops being their friend, for example, they feel very lonely. They feel that I can't do things. They feel really bad about themselves. That's because they've built a self-image that is very much dependent on others.
Mm-hmm.
Others make their strength. And this is dangerous for a child. It's dangerous for an adult as well. So allowing a child to build in confidence means that they are able to build their self-image on their own actions, based on their own personality, on their own skills, their own strengths. And so giving a child, attention to their strengths, two, allowing them to deal with situations, as I mentioned before as well, makes them realize that they have strengths, makes
mm-hmm.
them realize that they are able to do things on their own and they don't necessarily have to rely on others. And so if others are not there, if others say things and then leave them or they kind of break their relationship, they don't feel bad, they don't feel that. Or if they do, they're able to deal with it because they understand that I can do things on my own. I don't
right.
necessarily need anybody. It's not a level of arrogance, it's a level of inner self-esteem and strength, which is very important for all of us to have. And therefore, increasing social interaction for this child, say, go and talk to different people, but at the same time, always being behind them, allowing them to face a different situation, but come out of the difficulties through their own skills, their
right.
own strengths. That way they realize that I am my own individual.
Right. We'll discuss more with you, brother, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, encourage your sons in their childhood to learn etiquette, so that in their grown-up age, they can be the joy of your eyes.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIP English Radio. Here, Brother McDonald is helping those parents who face a situation where children are a little more sensitive. Like we had a question from a mother who is concerned about a child who cries over situations that happened long ago. And Brother McDonald gave us some of the beautiful points how to deal with these children.
Another point is that whenever you have these moments, as mentioned in the question, where the child is being told off, for example, or there is a kind of friction between the parents, it's important to close the chapter, right? Let the child cry, and then let it finish with a sorry, let it finish with a solution, let it finish with something, but finish it off. It's possible that the reason why this child cries about it a week later or a month later is because it never ended. They didn't cry over it at that time, or they didn't feel that it was finished. Right?
Okay.
So the child, the parents should try and bring a closer chapter. And even sometimes even through words. Say, look, this happened. Go through the whole story again. This happened. You did this something wrong, for example. I told you off. I screamed at you. If I did something wrong, I'm sorry. You should be sorry as well. Here's a solution for it. And from now on, this chapter has been closed. We park it away and it's done. This sense of closure as a mental state where you close a chapter can help a child that they don't feel that they
like it's still open.
Exactly, right. And still carrying it with them, basically.
Right.
And at any moment they feel like, oh, they get reminded of the thing that they're carrying and it bursts out in tears or it bursts out in different situations. So close up the chapter. Another thing is to not make big deal out of things. So this is important as well. First, as parents ourselves, we should be careful not to make things worse or bigger than they are. You know, sometimes you find that parents or adults, a small situation becomes, as I say in an expression, it becomes qiyamah, right? It becomes like the end of the world, right?
Right.
Somebody said this to somebody, and that's it. Life's over. I'm not sure what we're going to do from now on. Exaggeration upon exaggeration and making things look very big teaches a child that to take things at heart. Teaches a child that these things, this is how I behave with life situations. So parents need to be careful when they do this. Always look at situations the way they are, in a very rational, in a very logical way, without necessarily exaggerating. And so when children see parents dealing with situations this way, they realize that it's not the end of the world. It's not the most important things. Even important things, play it down, right? At the end of the day, we have Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we have the Imam, we know that Allah is in control of this situation. We know there's a purpose for everything. We know that if difficult things happen, there's a reason why it happened. We know that if people say things, worse things have happened in history to the Ahlul Bayt, for example. And so when you play things down, children realize that we are bigger than these things. We are bigger than emotions.
Right.
The more we teach children how to deal with their situations and showing them that there is bigger things in this world than these small things, these children are then be able to then overcome these emotions and not take things at heart.
Right. Thank you so much, brother, for helping this mother and many other mothers with that problem. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. In this special edition of Palestine Declassified, we're going to examine the extraordinary armed uprising of the Palestinian people against the Zionist entity, which has repeatedly and flagrantly spurned every single peaceful attempt to secure justice for Palestine. First up is Latifa Abu Chakra with a special report about this audacious military offensive by Palestinian freedom fighters that began in the early hours of Saturday morning on October the 7th.
As fragile as a spider's web, the Zionist entity is shaking with fear. In an early morning shock, Palestinian resistance factions from Gaza launched an unprecedented three-pronged attack on the entity. First, armed fighters sailed over the Israeli fence to Gaza using hand gliders. Simultaneously, 5,000 rockets were launched into the Zionist entity from the open-air prison of Gaza, disabling that much-vaunted Iron Dome system. At the same time, Palestinians broke down the fence, which fighters had sailed over, using bulldozers. What ensued was the homecoming of at least 1,000 Palestinians from the resistance factions into the fragile Zionist entity. Military bases were seized by the resistance, and Israel's Merkava tanks were captured and taken back to Gaza. Settlements like Sderot, whose Zionist guests had previously watched from hilltops while Gaza was bombed, were seized by the resistance. Over 100 settlers have been taken as prisoners of war by the resistance. The vast majority are members of the occupation forces. An area of occupied Palestine larger than the Gaza Strip was taken and held by the resistance factions, who reached within only 10 kilometers of the West Bank city of Al-Khalil, known to settlers as Hebron. It is documented that resistance factions were able to fashion weapons from unexploded munitions dropped on them by the Israelis. But did weapons from NATO escapades in Afghanistan and Ukraine really end up in Gaza? Time will tell. The fear of South Lebanon is palpable among the settlers, so much so that an Israeli occupation unit opened fire on an approaching truck close to Lebanon. They discovered that the vehicle carried 7 Israeli fighters. All had been killed by the Zionist-friendly fire. Overall, in a space of 48 hours, at least 700 settlers were killed. The vast majority were part of the occupation forces. To put the figure into perspective, in proportion to the size of the population of the colony, that is the equivalent of over 20,000 people in the United States. In the midst of it all, Russian hacker group Killnet took down the site of the Israeli regime administration, further spreading panic and fear. Nearly all major stocks in Israel are in the red, with the benchmark index recording the biggest loss for over a year. Poland,